Welcome to All Learning Reimagined, the podcast that defines convention and redefines the purpose and practice of education. Here we venture beyond institutional boundaries. Whether you're a parent, educator, or curious mind devoted to lifelong growth, this is your space to challenge assumptions and co-create a more humane and intuitive approach to education. Let's reimagine what education can be.
G'day, and welcome to All Learning Reimagined. I'm your host, Teresa, bringing you a little ray of sunshine, as together we're reimagining the future of education, one inspired story at a time. And today I have back our beautiful Mirai, who I interviewed a few weeks ago, and she's an explorer of human consciousness, human communication, and human connection, and she cares about freeing the human spirit. She holds and facilitates space for authentic relating. Oh my giddy aunt, she's amazing at this. And she especially loves to uncover treasures which are buried in situations of conflict. And we're certainly going to be deep diving today into the topic of failure and embracing failure. So welcome back, Mirai.
Oh, thank you so much, Teresa. Our last time together was deeply meaningful and exciting for me. And I love that we flow so wonderfully together, that we are both wanting to do a second one. And it's actually building on the last one, as we both know, partially.
I know. And so for anybody who's listening, the reason why we're laughing is because I absolutely stuffed up. So Mariah and I had pre-recorded a clean setup, sort of like a conversation that we held space before we came on to the podcast. And we actually recorded it because we were planning to share it at a separate show to talk about how you can set up space. And me, in my busy little life, didn't cut that part out of the last interview. I just sent it on to our amazing BBS people. So apologies, Don, Doug, BBS crew, love you. You guys are amazing. And sorry that might have confused you. I was a complete gumby and sent it off. However, our follow-up conversations, Mirai, wasn't really an accident, because the amount of conversations that have come from that, and people got to listen to us just raw having a conversation. And so I'm starting to reflect now on, was it really an accident? Or, you know, did my greater being have a plan for this? Because it's such a good way to start learning and teaching or sharing knowledge with how you can set up a space for conversation. So anyway, so my apologies, because
no apology.
I'll totally own it. But you know what? I've already let it go, because there's always something really good that comes out of it, which is our conversation today. But I'll hand it over to you.
It was just so fascinating. So we had to give it a little bit more backstory. So we had this idea of, we're going to record this thing before the show, and then we're going to stop the recording, and then we record the second bit. And for some reason, it stayed together, was sent over all at once, published all together. And so the thing that was behind the scenes was the very beginning. And I had several people commenting on, oh, it was so fascinating, yeah, that you were right into it. And as you said, Teresa, the rawness, the realness, it's the...
Yeah.
And I listened back to it. I discovered this firstly. I listened to us and it was like, oh no, this is the part that was not meant to be in. Ah! And then it grew on me. And especially with the feedback that I got, it's like, wow, you know, this is what we did before the show. And how we tuned in, and these were our real intentions, completely private, like overhearing a private conversation. And now this is what we're sharing. And isn't this actually what how we want to show up in any way? Like we want to, this whole podcast is about being real, I imagine. Like the reimagined future is about human beings being real with each other and with, oh, this went different than I had planned. Oh, how fascinating. Look where it's taking us. I mean, there's all these stories also in the business world about stuff that went off seemingly, but then in the end, one of the, you know, was this gorgeous new invention. I think one of the most famous one that many people may know is about the Post-its. Do you know that story?
Briefly, but not really.
Okay, so they wanted to create a glue. So this was from a company who did different kinds of glue, and there was one that just wouldn't stick properly. And this is the basis of Post-it. So it was meant to be a glue that sticks, but then like this non-sticky glue is actually the thing why Post-its work, where you can put them on somewhere and then you take them off and you put them somewhere else.
Yeah, it's
So
amazing.
this started with a mistake, and how many things that at some point are the new wonderful invention or the new normality, even at another time, are a so-called mistake or a failure. And if everything only always went as planned, what a boring life we would live, wouldn't it be?
Oh, I agree. And you know what? I was just relieved I wasn't swearing because, you know, I'm Australian, so we like to swear a lot. So I'm quite glad that I wasn't swearing in that particular conversation. But no, it was I'm the sort of person that once it's gone, it's gone. I can't do anything. I cannot go back and change the past. So you just have to own it and go, okay, what can I learn from this? And that's sort of my default with the way I view life, really, with the way we go. And I guess we're all actually experts at failing because when you think about it, even as a baby, when you're learning to walk, you stand up, you wobble, you fall down, you stand up, you wobble, you fall down. And I don't have to crawl on my hands and knees to the local market. I did finally learn to walk. So I have grit, I have tenacity, I have resilience. I actually managed to learn from those failures and move on. And we've managed to do that all of our life. So it's just, I guess, a matter of perspective of how we see failure, and how we shift that.
And this is what I contemplated on before today. It's like, what does turn something into a failure? What does it turn from, oh, I'm in the process of learning, as this, you know, this ex wonderful example you just gave, and I'm not yet a star or a master at it, but I'm, you know, I'm, and we will receive encouragement. So, you know, little children, babies will receive encouragement like, oh, you know, you tried, you're falling, you tried, you're falling, that's all. But then what does turn something into an experience of failure and not, I'm practicing?
That's I mean, as an educator, I have seen many children and teenagers over the years both be in, you know, different children in the same situation and handle it very differently depending on the pressures, you know, the parent expectations or society or cultural expectations or their own sense of self of I'm not worthy because I didn't get that grade because of the judgment. And yet other children might be so excited to get a C grade. Yay, I passed. I didn't get a D. It was not an A. You know, who cares? They don't care. So it's really a matter of that perspective. And I feel like it has to come back to who we are and how people see themselves, you know, that sense of self-worth, as to how they shift their perspective of what the word failure might even mean.
You said, I think, an essential word just as I'm listening to you, and that is the expectation, either by parents or by educators or by anyone around or by oneself. This is my expectation. That is my measurement. And then we measure ourselves against something, and so easily within what happens in the mind, there's the falling short. And that is actually the failure, isn't it? Like it's like a math. It's like the difference between meeting expectations and where we currently are. That's how big of a failure it is. And if there weren't these expectations of this is where you should be in grade four, you know, this is what you should know about different topics, then there wasn't even a failure. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. And I, culture comes into that because there are some children that I've taught over the years where if they didn't do well in a certain subject at school and it doesn't matter to them, it has no meaning for them, if it doesn't tap into their why, then should they even really care if it wasn't going to have any relevance in their real life outside of school? Because unfortunately, learning is life, and school doesn't always translate in that space in some parts of the world anyway. So, and yet there are other children that hang every little sense of self-worth on those expectations and that pressure. And then I've seen many children burn out, and adults for that matter. And yet, how many people would you know in your life that say, I was made redundant, or my marriage is over, or something happened, and then a few years down the track they say, wow, that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. So in hindsight they can look back, but in the time when that's the storm in the teacup and they can't see the forest for the trees, that feeling and that emotion with failure, I feel like emotion is that glue, that emotion that you attach to failure and what it could be. Seems to trigger a lot of things within us, physically within us, in our nervous system as well.
Very much so. And the two emotions that come that I'm present to are fear and shame. So as I'm not able to do this yet, it's gonna, you know, I'm already holding my breath. It's gonna lead to this horrible thing in the future, and that's the fear. Or it's, oh, you know, what will others think of me? And I'm not worthy. I'm, you know, I don't belong. I will. Who knows what, be judged, be rejected. So this, yeah. And the sense of safety, I thought about that also. And, you know, I listened, actually, today, I listened to your episode on play, and the importance of play. And I'm so with you on that. And how, and I contemplated when, what are the core ingredients for being able to be playful? Because being playful and the judgment of failure and mistakes seem like really opposite to me. And the play seems to need a sense of safety. Or maybe even the being playful creates safety. Maybe it's both.
I feel like it could possibly be complex, but I do agree with you, because when you look at neuroscience and they're saying that our brains are constantly scanning every 5 seconds for threat, and it's not like a saber-toothed tiger is going to jump out anytime soon, going to eat me, but at the moment it's social threat, and in schooling situations it's what are people going to say about me? Are they talking about me? Are they looking at me? And that is still that threat which puts people into that fight, flight, freeze situation and the cortisol in their body. So that sense of safety would certainly affect play. Am I accepted? Am I loved? That love and belonging is really important. And that does also then tie into that sense of failure, because if you feel like you are loved and not judged, I mean, look at Sarah Blakely, who we've talked about before, the CEO of Spanx, who has said in many different interviews around her kitchen table or dining room table at nighttime.
How about, can we play that? Just to give a little bit of a different, to bring
Yes,
a third
okay.
voice
So
in here.
for people who
Okay.
are listening, we're going to play the clip so you can listen to Sarah's own words. And I really loved this because it really reshaped how I saw my own parenting, actually. I did have to stop and reflect on my own parenting.
Really finding So redefining failure.
Growing up, my father used to ask my brother and me what we had failed at the dinner table, which was so interesting, and he'd celebrate it, and he'd actually be disappointed if I didn't have something that I failed at that week. So I can remember saying, "Dad, Dad, I tried out for this and I was horrible." And he would actually high-five me and say, "Congratulations, way to go." And what it did was just reframe my definition of failure. Failure for me became not trying versus the outcome. So many people don't take risks for fear of failure. They don't start the business. They don't go create the art they want to create, or they don't go try out to be in the play or whatever it is for the fear of failure. And once you redefine that for yourself and realize the failure is just not trying, then life opens up to you in many ways. And I would also, my dad would encourage me anytime something didn't go the way I expected it to, or maybe I got embarrassed by a situation, to write down where the hidden gifts were and what I got out of it. And I started realizing in everything there was some amazing nugget that I wouldn't have wanted to pass up. At Spanx, to encourage people to fail, I'm bringing up my failures in front of the team often. So I will stand up and I call them the oops of Spanx. Some of them are the oops throughout the history of Spanx. Some of them can be recent oops that I did, but I'm always openly talking about it. If you're going to have a oops, part of the beauty of it is twofold. If there's a failure quote or an oops in your life, if you learn from it and if you can laugh about it, then it's all worth it.
Oh, isn't she amazing? And what an amazing dad. Like, to actually sit around the dining room
Whoa.
table and say, "What did you fail at today?" Like, what? Talk about building grit. That's amazing.
Totally. And this is both her dad and then also what she makes out of it as a leader of a company really gives insight into the role that anyone working or creating learning spaces has. We are the meaning makers. So something happens, and then, as a child, falls down, scratches their knee, and one parent will say, "Hey, wow, you almost made it," and the child is like, "Ah, smile, I almost made it," continue doing the roller skates or whatnot. And another parent will go like, "Oh my God, did you hurt yourself?" And the child will, really mostly feel the pain and, "Oh, something bad happened, and now I'm crying or whatever, or I'm ashamed that I didn't make it." So it's the meaning making that we give. It's the story that we each tell actually about life. It's this really this larger narrative of what is life? Is life, is this a place there where we either succeed or fail? Or is this place where we move together and explore and try out? And it's like, "Oh, wow, that's what happened. Okay, now what? How do we move forward with where we landed, as with our interview?"
Well, that's why we're here, because I made a big oops. I had a total oops, which was great. I absolutely agree with you. And what was coming through for me then when you were talking, what I was feeling was the victim archetype, which I know I have sat in that role throughout my lifetime of the, "Oh, I failed, poor me. Look at me, look what's happened to me, or look what the world or that person is doing to me." Not realizing and standing in my own power of being a creator being, and the fact that I have to own it. Everybody, it doesn't matter what it is that happens to you, it's how you respond that's really the key, and how you're shifting and creating your mal reality to fail or to move forward in that space. And it's taken me a long time to really have that land for me and to peel that layer off.
Wow, and there's also something in our society where there's so much related back to childhood. We're kind of immersed now in this kind of psychological, "Oh yeah, that's because when I was," and we believe that, and we're kind of caged into the story, and I've been there for so many years. "Oh yeah, this is, because of certain things and when I grew up." And yes, there can be a truth to it, yet it could also be that it's not as linear. We are not like this because something happened in our past, but also very much something happened in our past. And then how did we deal with it? What was the surrounding? And then every day, how do we deal with this? There's a book, It's Never Too Late to Have a Happy Childhood by Ben Foreman, a psychologist from, I think, from Norway or Sweden, just escaped me, where the book tells the story of they followed up with orphans who grew up in an orphanage, really with some dire circumstances. And I followed up with them and interviewed them as adults. And many of them, in their ways, had a good life and had, relationships that worked, and there was a lot of good stuff that they reported, that they kind of, yeah, there was this and that hardships, and many of them were able to cope with them. And that doesn't mean everyone, that I'm wanting to dismiss hardships that we have, just to be sure, but it's really very much about how we do deal with something. And so the book describes how one woman talked very harshly about her childhood memories and how she was still impacted and how bad that was. And they noticed how different that was than from the other children she had grown up with. And in the conversation that went a little deeper, it turned out her dad had recently passed and she had a hard time with that. She took on a psychological counseling, and she reported to the interviewer that it didn't stay just with her father, but it went also to her childhood. And the counselor would say, "Oh my God, this is the most horrible childhood story that I've ever heard." So suddenly she, like her inner map, shifted into what a horrible childhood she had had. And that shifted how she moved through life. So we are continuously giving meaning to everything. And that is what you say, where we can be in the, oh, there's the meaning of what happened to me. Or we find a way to access what is happening through me now and through us.
Oh, I love that. I agree that. And I do love the making the meaning up. That makes a lot of sense to me. And it reminds me of the old story of the boat. Like if you're in a boat and you're driving the boat and the wake is behind the boat, that's the baggage, that's the what ifs, that's the everything that happened, but it doesn't steer the boat. So those people that are constantly looking behind them in the past, what if this didn't happen to me? What if that didn't happen to me? And at some stage, they need to grip the steering wheels and look beyond and look forward to what they choose. And that's not an easy thing to do with trauma. You know, there's just so many layers with trauma that seems to shift in so many places. But that whole idea of failure, where you're right, where you can identify where something went wrong, doesn't have to be you personally or a person there, but the situation possibly went wrong, and then try and reconfigure and find the best path to continue forward. But it's not linear, it's spiral, because we're spiraling up and we're leveling up and we're learning and we're going around again. And those people that you see and they make the same mistakes over and over throughout their life because they haven't learnt that lesson, to be able to then move on. So they're perpetuating that same reality in the same circumstances, possibly in a different workplace or in a different group of people. Or it's fascinating to really sit back and observe how all of this plays out. And I am not an expert in any way, shape, or form, but I am an expert at failing because I do it all the time. I do it all the time. And doesn't bother me anymore. I used to be an absolute perfectionist, but I've completely peeled that programming away because that was society programming. And releasing that was just like, you know, the shackles have just gone. And because the only expectation had to come from me, and as soon as I shifted that perspective for me, everything changed. It was really
Brené Brown, in her TED talk that I'm sure you will know, she talks about perfectionism and how that is very much a way to deal with shame, like to be afraid of land to land in a place of shame. And so we try to be, make no mistake, don't fail, don't try anything, don't dare to go for taking risks. Well, one path forward could be a personal path. I very much care about this, the path where people get together and they say, what kind of rules do we want to make up so that we don't create this a space in which there is this fear of failure running the show, but there is a space of, oh, what, wow, this is what happened. Oh, that's unexpected. Okay, now what do we do with it? So, it's really hard to, if everything else flows in one direction, to then say, well, but I do go my own way. It's not impossible, but it's really hard. So I really care for people crafting and having, even starting to have a conversation. How are we dealing with the topic of failure in this place, in our learning space, in our group, in our, I don't know, homeschooling or official schooling? How do we deal with failure, so-called failure? And what culture are we creating? I would love to see these kind of conversations happen.
I agree, and that comes back to safety, feeling as if it's okay to make mistakes and you're not going to be yelled at or judged or, hit with a ruler behind your knees or whatever it was that happened in schooling over the years. And creating that environment is actually vital, I think. It's like a little ecosystem where failure is just normalized. And you name the animal, the elephant in the room. You just name it, and then that takes the power away from it. The amount of children I have seen go to huge de nths of degree to get into trouble, to be thrown out of a classroom, so that they didn't even have to try. They were avoiding having a go, so they would rather get into trouble than actually failing at something because of those expectations. So there's
Wow.
always an undercurrent as to why. Some children act the way that they do. I always stop and go, why? What is it? What need are they trying to fill? Or what is it that they're trying to avoid? And failure is often an undercurrent that I see, or that avoidance or fear of failure. That fear, face it and do it anyway. There's so many different layers. And when you have that honest conversation with them, one-on-one, of course, without an audience, and then they can see it for themselves, that's where the powerful shift can be, when they can then take it back themselves, not have to have an adult tell them what to do. They can actually own it themselves. And that's one of the most precious gifts you can give them for life, really.
Yeah, I know we are very much at the, coming to a close. There's two things I want to say towards the end. One is, what happens with this fear of failure is a quality of curiosity, I believe. Like, oh, oh, this is unexpected. This is different from what we planned. Oh, what is it enabling that we also hadn't planned? So this, like, openness, and there's actually a physical thing that we can do to enhance our nervous system capacity. And that is to do something with our eyes, like have the baby eye, not the like squinching and like calculating and dealing with the world in a rational way. But if you really deliberately open up your eye and practice the gaze of the baby eyes, it shifts something inside.
Oh, that's amazing that you say that, because for years I have shared with children to look up, because when you look up, it changes the physiology as well, which is interesting because a lot of these children today are constantly looking down at their phone or down at a device, and that actually cycle, when you're depressed, what do? You look down. So their body doesn't know the difference, but when they look up, it actually it opens up even that whole energetic optimism and looks up. So that's very, very simple thing to do. And sometimes it could be just putting a picture on their bedroom wall where they can look up of something, their picture of their dog or their favorite toy or a family that member that they love, and then they look up. And it's a very simple trick to do, but and I don't know energetically or in the body what it is that it does, but it certainly works. It certainly works.
Definitely, if we celebrate something, there's this like opening of the body,
Absolutely.
the arms to the side. Often the eyes go upwards, and that's the joy. And as you described, this Depression is exactly the opposite. It's hunching, condensing. Yeah. Yes,
Absolutely.
that's a practical thing. I would love for people to try this out. Not
Yeah.
just the kids, the adults as well.
I think I'm gonna do it today.
Me too.
Oh
Me
my
too.
gosh, Mariah, we are out of time. But thank you so much for coming back on and sharing my oops moment with the world. And of course, sharing your beautiful wise, everything about you is wise, all the wise words and wisdom that you have to share. So we really have appreciated and enjoyed having you on the show today.
It was a huge pleasure. Thank you so much. I love being in this place of playfulness and depth with you, Teresa.
Yeah, thank you. It's really beautiful. And for everybody else, thanks for joining us at All Learning Reimagined. Until next week, explore, experience, express, go out and live learning. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on All Learning Reimagined, where passion illuminates the path forward. Remember this: the future of learning doesn't arrive from above, it begins within. You are the spark, the shift, the living answer to education's silent call for transformation. So stay curious, stay awake. Let inspiration be your compass, because how we learn today is not just personal, it is profoundly generative. It shapes the very architecture of tomorrow's world. We are not separate from the system, we are its evolution. Until next time, trust the wisdom of your own unfolding and let your life be the lessons that light the way for others.